This is the YGN podcast, created by Young Guns Network, the professional network by and for young people in music. Welcome to the YGN podcast. I'm Remy Harris, co-founder with Sam Potts of YGN. This podcast features a recording of the event YGN and Youth Music present Building a Portfolio Music Career. The event was recorded on the 25th of June 2019 at Tile Yard Studios in London. You'll hear our co-host Daniel Williams of Youth Music, me as the moderator, and our four guest speakers, Adam Holness, Relationship Manager, Arts Council England, and Music Curator at Horniman Museum and Garden, Abby Morrow, who's a singer-songwriter and a music leader, Max Wheeler, who's a musician slash producer, consultant, author, and youth music tutor, and Andrea De Leon, A&R Manager, Audio Network, and owner of 4Nothing Management, representing IAMA. Thank you to our sponsors BIM, the Musicians Union, Handle Recruitment, Youth Music and Remy Harris Consulting for making this event and this podcast possible. For more about us, check out the website ygn.co and follow us on social media at YGN. Welcome to YGN and Youth Music present Build a Music Portfolio Career. I'm Remy Harris. I'm the co-founder with Sam Potts, who's here somewhere, of Young Guns Network. And I'm going to invite Daniel from Youth Music to come up and say a few words and open the event. Daniel.
Just stand here. Hi there. Hi, I'm Daniel. I'm the program manager at Youth Music. Really pleased to be here and thanks to you all for coming. Yeah, we're really pleased to be working with YGN tonight to partner on this event, and thanks to Tile Yard as well for hosting us. So the reason that we thought this would be a really interesting panel discussion to partner with YGN on tonight is I've been to a few YGN events now, but I'm still a relative newcomer. And we thought that there was a certain part of the music sector which hadn't been spoken about as much, which I think that young people might really be interested in as a career option, and that was sort of making music with young people. So I just thought I'd give you an intro into some of the work that Youth Music does. So a lot of the musicians and people working in the music industry that we know through our work at Youth Music, some of whom are on the panel today, have careers where they're involved in all sorts of different sides of the industry. And I guess it's this thing of what's been termed a portfolio music career. So working freelance, having multiple jobs, having a side hustle, for a lot of these guys, a big part of their income seems to come through running or facilitating or leading music projects with young people. And I think this can be a really interesting and rewarding area of work where you feel like you're making a real difference to people's lives and to the world we're living in. So it's an area that Youth Music knows quite a lot about. We're the UK's largest young people's music making charity. And so for those of you who don't know, we're a funding body. So the way that that works, it means that we fundraise for money to give out to organisations who run music projects. And so we currently fund about 275 different organisations that work with young people across the country. And they reach about 90,000 young people every year. So in London, this includes organisations like Represent Radio, the Albany in Deptford, Art Against Knives, Raw Material in Brixton, Amy Winehouse Foundation. There's tons of great organisations that we work with across the country. And these projects really focus on supporting people who might not otherwise have the chance to access music. Could be because of who they are, where they live, or something that they're going through in their lives. So this means our projects normally take place outside of school settings, in places like youth clubs, arts venues, or mental health settings, sometimes prisons, music studios, radio stations, nurseries, hospitals, like all sorts of different places where we want music to be. And so we believe that young people should get the chance to learn music, but it's also about the kind of music that they want to learn as well. So that means we work across like every style and genre of music. And you might have seen recently we caused a bit of controversy in the media when we had the nerve to say that hip-hop should be more included in the music curriculum. And it led to the media saying that we wanted to replace Mozart with Stormzy, which was a bit ridiculous. And we don't. We just think that there should be more balance. Yeah, there's plenty of on offer for young people who want to learn Western classical music. But what if you want to make something else? So So the money that we fundraise for our work comes through the Lottery and Arts Council, and we also run a campaign called Give a Gig. That's for artists who want to put on gigs and donate the profits to us. Recently worked with Clean Bandit and Aurora and Bicep, and we're really looking to get more artists involved in that so that we can fund more projects. So that's probably enough from me. Hopefully that gives you a little flavour of the work that we do. And if you're excited about working with youth music or working with some of the projects that we fund or the organisations that we work with, then do come and chat to us. My colleagues Domenica and Christina are at the back as well, and we'll be around for a bit after the panel. We've also got some bags that you can take, and it's got like our contact details and socials and stuff like that in there. Hopefully that gives you a flavour of what we do, and I'll hand over to the panel. Thanks very much.
Cheers. Thanks very much, Daniel, and thanks to Youth Music for supporting this event. So for those of you that don't know, as well as being co-founder of Young Guns Network, I also have another job, which is also freelance, which is training and coaching and supporting people who run creative businesses or are artists, and training them in all kinds of business skills. So this topic is really dear to my heart. I've come from one job today and then run up the road with all my Young Guns Network staff to come and do this tonight. So I think they'll be familiar to a lot of you that have got multiple different kind of hats and things going on in your careers. And talking to the panel over the last couple of weeks, I found out a lot about their stories as well, about how they manage and juggle everything that they do. So I'm going to get them to really briefly introduce themselves. And then I have some questions for you guys. So coming to Andrea first, who's one of our original team that put together YGN back 6 years ago. And you want to talk about what you're doing now? Yep.
So my name is Andrea De Leon, and I am an A&R manager. So I'm the A&R manager for the UK and Europe at a company called Audio Network. So we create music for film and TV, adverts, brands, games, everything. But I'm also an artist manager, so I kind of split my time between the two.
Hello, everyone. Yeah, my name's Max Wheeler, and I'm a music producer and artist, half of a duo called Anushka. We released our last album with Giles Peterson on Brownswood Records. But I also do a bunch of different stuff, a lot of it focusing around education. So I've taught kind of workshops and run education projects for years. But I also head up an online program called VIP Studio Sessions, which has got about 40,000 young people using it. It's kind of online cloud-based music technology program in schools. And yeah, I do a lot of things which are kind of blurrily in the middle of education and music.
Hey guys, I'm Abby Morrow. I'm a singer-songwriter, and I'm also a music leader. So I lead lots of workshops and kind of help all different people, young people, older people, really little ones, I help them songwrite. And I also design courses and things like that in kind of songwriting and developing your creative voice.
Hi, my name's Adem. Currently, I spend half my week working for Arts Council England in the music team in London, and the other half of my week I work for the Horniman Museum and Gardens in Southeast London. I'm a curator there, looking after a brand new music programme.
Okay, and starting with you, Adam, you just started your job today.
Yes, I started today.
Your second job. Yep. How did it go?
Good. Spent the afternoon talking about decolonising museums.
Okay, very good. And so you've done loads of different roles in the past, haven't you?
I have.
Including being a musician,
yep,
working for Arts Council, and a ton of different stuff. How do you balance the different things that you're working on?
I use iCal. It's my iCalendar, to just get a good sense of what is going on a day-to-day basis. And pretending... Oh, no, that pretending is the wrong word. Communicating that the person that I'm working with in the moment is the most important client that I have in front of me.
You put that very diplomatically.
Yeah.
And Abimaro, what about you? Because you've got your own very successful songwriting, performing and recording and everything going on. And then you've got the music facilitation work that you do. So does it feel like one is more what you want to be doing than the other? I mean, I imagine that people would imagine that being
an artist and doing your own music is somehow like higher in your priorities than the other work. Is that the case?
Not necessarily. I feel like they feed each other. So I feel like sometimes, you know, there'll be weeks where I'll be like, oh my goodness, like what, something's taken over. Usually workshops can kind of take over my schedule sometimes, partly because it's more fixed and it's less kind of driven by myself. And there might be quite a few people who get that here. Like if you're a singer-songwriter and you're independent, you're the only one who's really pushing you. So it can be, it can mean that you're just driving yourself constantly. Whereas with workshops, I have kind of more targets and more people that I'm having to answer to. But honestly, they feed each other. And I think the more that I do it, the more that I see that. And so the fact that you kind of have to be in a room, and I think especially young people, they see through you. So if you're talking to someone about how to sing or songwrite and things like that, if you're not coming from a place of honesty, and if maybe you're not coming from a place of doing it, I think that it shows. So it helps me to kind of stay on my toes when I'm working with amazing young people who are so gifted.
And how do you carve out time then to do your own songwriting and make your own music?
I've found recently what's been really helpful is kind of planning my diary around the term. So I have a school diary, and I kind of plan it around, actually a lot of my workshops are often in term time, and then I find it really helpful because now I'm setting more targets for myself based on when I haven't in those breaks, which I find really helpful. So I'm releasing music in July because that is when I've kind of had a bit of a summer break, and I've purposely chosen not to take on loads and loads of summer workshops. Instead, the summer this year for me is all about putting time into my music. So that's been a really helpful timeline for me.
And Max, you've got multiple hats on, but before you were with your current group, you were with other groups and releasing stuff on different labels before, yeah, weren't you? So you've always been, yeah, able to release your own music all the time.
Yeah, and I think actually talking just before the session in the kind of networking there, the thing that I realised that is maybe a bit unusual about me is that from kind of day one, the first record deal that I got was almost exactly the same time that I started teaching workshops. So I've kind of always done both. There wasn't a sense of like, oh, I've been in the industry for a while and now I'm jaded and I want to work with the community. And there also wasn't that kind of, oh, well, I've been working with the community, but what about me? They felt quite naturally okay next to each other. And I think, whereas it used to seem like unusual, people, and I'd find this odd pressure maybe when I started out with like, what, you actually admit that you do workshops, don't you, like keep that secret? But I think nowadays I tend to get more people kind of saying, oh, how could I get involved? Or, and exactly like you're saying, I found that the two things, interestingly, if I don't, because sometimes I don't teach as many workshops these days because I've got things going on, if I don't do it for a few months, I'll start to feel like a lack of inspiration. Yeah. Like I kind of need to do the workshops just to keep me on my toes. And it's like, there's things like drill music at the moment. Like I probably wouldn't ordinarily be deep into drill production. That wouldn't naturally be on my radar. But I mentor a lot of young people who want to make drill. So now I could probably tell you the top three drill producers. I could tell you the snare patterns, you know, stuff that I've found because of the young people that I wouldn't. And it's the same with, like, I used to work in the Northwest. Everyone there was into hard house. I didn't like hard house music, but I had all the sample packs for all the hard house labels to teach these kids. Half of those samples ended up on my first weird hybrid grime album on Brownswood because they were on my computer. And so it's those weird little cross sections that are the most interesting thing to me. Like, you know, the community stuff takes you to places you might not ordinarily go, but it's the same way, you know, you go to university, so you study stuff you don't want to study. Like, and I think working with young people is amazing like that. Cause it's like, if you turn up and the kid likes the music that you don't like, what are you going to do? Are you going to tell them they're wrong? Or are you going to challenge your own prejudices and kind of explore some new music? And I think that's what keeps me excited about it all.
And Andrea, you've got your job that you're in now is pretty full on job anyway, isn't it? So how do you fit in the time to also attend to your artist and make sure that you're pushing their career forward?
For me, it's about finding kind of the efficiencies and how I'm working, which I'm still kind of finding those at the moment. But because I have a full-time job, I have to make sure, you know, on my lunch breaks and when after work and before work, that I'm kind of applying the time to my artist to make sure that I'm getting things done for them. I would say it's probably the most difficult part of all of this, having two jobs at the same time, but I managed to get it done. And yeah, it's about, you know, making sure you have that work-life balance, so you're still having your personal life and you're doing the things that you need to do for yourself, but you're still getting things done. So it's about finding those efficiencies and finding, you know, as you were saying, making sure that your diary is planned so you know what you need to do each day and what time you can do it. So,
and why is it important to you to have this other business when you already have a job? Why do that?
For me, it's kind of a passion thing. So I was in management before I started this job, and I was day-to-day managing some artists, and it's something that I've always been passionate about. And for me, when I found an artist that I wanted to solely manage by myself, the music was something that I was really interested in, and it's always something that I wanted to kind of carry forward. So getting a day job was kind of there to stabilize myself, but I'm also passionate about A&R and always have been. So it was kind of killing two birds with one stone and having both positive parts of my life going at the same time. But my A&R job allows me to do my management job because I'm, you know, I'm getting paid. And with the management stuff, as it grows and money starts coming in, they're both kind of becoming my stabilizers.
Adam, I'm going to ask you about how the two jobs that you have now, how you see them kind of feeding into each other. How are they going to sort of benefit each other, if you know what I mean?
Yeah, I think, so I was saying this to Remy before we were chatting. I've never had one full-time job, but I've always had a full-time workload. And kind of throughout my working life so far, everything has always completely crossed over. From I used to be in a band, and I used to work for a youth music funded organization called Sound Connections. I used to run their program for 16 to 25 year olds. And a really practical example is when I was doing, I had to do this big national project with Sound Connections where I was going around the country and meeting different people doing stuff. And half of the people that I met doing that project ended up supporting the development of my band's first tour. And because music education in the formal sense and then informal music education and the music industry is all part of the same ecology, and it's all the same people who are interested in interested in doing the same stuff, and actually building those relationships with everyone is what I think means they cross over. So even now at the Arts Council in the Horniman, I'm chatting to the same people about just different stuff.
And you, when we were talking before this event, you told me about some really good advice that your auntie gave you, I think.
Yes.
Do you want to share that?
Yeah, so
with the world.
Yeah, when I was leaving education, my aunt is a visual artist, and she's now she's much older, and she has never worked full time either. And she said to me what she suggested I should do, because I had just at that time wanted to just sing songs. She said to spend half your time working in education and the other half of your time working on developing your practice and building that up. And so that's what I did. And that's, those two things have evolved into I was teaching music at the time, don't do that anymore. And I was making music, but I'm not doing that anymore. But those two things have kind of developed into what I'm doing now. But you can only do that if you make the education part financially viable for you and your circumstances. Definitely don't start working part-time if that's not going to work for you and the reality of what you're doing.
We're going to come back on to talking about financial side of things a little bit later, but Abimaro, how do your two jobs feed into each other, and how does your education work kind of feed into your own writing?
So I think just basically it keeps me quite sharp, and because it keeps me writing every day. So I was speaking to someone the other day actually who said, how many songs are you written, do you think, in your workshops? And it's like over 100. Like I've written loads of songs with, you know, obviously with the young people. I don't go in there and write songs for them and like pass them off. But it's something that is incredible because you're part of that process constantly, and you're seeing how they are like doing stuff, and it challenges you. I think when you teach, it really shows you about your practice and how you do things. And you can't keep it too stale because it's just boring. So if I'm going into the same place or different places but doing the same thing, it's just a bit boring. So it's been really helpful for me, especially with songwriting. One thing I'm really passionate about is taking in different tools to start songwriting. So rather than just starting from a blank page, how can we change this? So let's look at themes, or let's look at cut-up technique, or let's look at writing in a certain time signature, or let's look at writing a certain key, or things that will basically start your creative juices flowing so that anyone can access it and you can kind of do it from a different jump-off point. And that really excites me, because then when I go home, I can do that as well. So I do this thing where sometimes I'll go into a coffee shop and I'll just write down, I'll kind of eavesdrop and I'll write down what people are saying. And then that will help me build a story for a song. And that is something that I was inspired to do by talking to some young people when they were like, "Abs, but how do I like get ideas or stories?" And then I gave them that idea and I thought, yeah, I could do that as well. So it's like that keeps me interested, because I think creativity is all about being inspired and interested. And so sometimes life doesn't always give you that in every day, like just, you know, in exactly what you're doing. So you have to go and find it. And young, not just young people, because I also work with quite young, like key stage one, like 5-year-olds. And also I work with people who are like over 80. I run a choir with people who are over 80. And they give me a whole new understanding of life and trying things and being challenged. So, yeah.
Thank you. And Max, you've had one particular song that you mentioned that you've worked that's done really well for you, that came out of a session with a young person.
Yeah, so you keep saying everything I'm thinking before I say it. So yeah. No, but there's one example that I always give of this, that I do a music leader training project. So each year it's an organization called Audio Active, and we'll train music leaders to deliver their own workshops. It's one of my favorite projects. And it will kind of turn into these like little series of masterclasses based on the needs that they identify, things they want to work on. So there was one trainee that I was working with, and he wanted to know this particular technique for kind of chopping up jungle breaks and how basically chopping up samples in music software. And I was like, "Look, this is how you do it." And I was like, "That sounds kind of good, actually." And I was like, "Hang on, just one second." I was like, "Okay, I'm going to save this." I put it on my memory stick. Took it home that night, kind of forgotten all about it. Got home, was like, "Oh, there was something I was doing today." Put it into the computer, and then I was like, "Maybe if I just drop this onto this song Victoria's sent." And I was like, that's the missing thing. And that was the tune that Annie Mac supported really heavily, booked us to come play a festival. Like, well, so like a lot of like really great stuff that happened for us. A big part of it came from me teaching a, you know, technique in a workshop. And I think if I'd have been sat on my own in my studio all day, I might not have done that. I might have just sat staring at the screen, scratching my head, thinking, "What should I do with this song? I'll just do the same thing I did with the last song." But because I'm, do you know what it is? It's just interacting with other humans is just good for you. And it's like not on a career level, not on a music, just on a profoundly basic human level. It's just a good thing to do. And it just takes you to places you wouldn't get to. And I've been kind of getting a bit deep with all this, where I think some of it is just about other people force you to be in the moment. And you know, like you were saying about the other person there is the most important person in that moment. And that's what I think I get with young people, is that they just peel away all the rubbish in your life. Like when you're in a prison working with someone, when you're in a school, or when you're working with a special needs project, you're not looking at your emails. You're not kind of like going through some list of notes thinking, you're just sort of existing with another person. And I think that takes you to places you can't get to on your own. And I think that's what keeps me doing it. Even if financially I maybe didn't have to do it, I probably would still do it just for that kind of human connection.
I'm going to switch up the questions. And Andrew, I'm going to ask you, what is a kind of day in the life of somebody that's running a business at the same time as having a full-time job? What does that look like? Do you up at 5 doing a workout and then on your emails?
I wish I had the energy to do that. It looks like me commuting to work and what I usually do is I'll be on my emails like from the time I get up, which is not actually healthy, so you shouldn't do that. But I will be, you know, firing off emails for my management stuff before I get into the office for my A&R stuff. And then when I'm in the office, I'm making sure I'm focusing on what I need to do for that day. I think for me, one thing that's been really helpful is making sure I prioritize my lists every morning. So I'll prioritize both my lists for what I need to do using Google Keep, which is very helpful. And then during the day, yeah, just, you know, doing my day-to-day on my lunch breaks, I will eat my lunch. But at the same time, I will make sure that I'm firing off emails for my management stuff. And then, again, jumping back and refocusing my mind. It can be difficult sometimes because you're having to refocus from one thing into another thing. And then, you know, planning my weekends as well. My weekends consist of my artist management stuff. And, yeah, just hour by hour, making sure that I have it planned and I know what I'm doing. So by the time I go to sleep, I know I've got everything done.
And is your work understanding of your kind of double life that you're
They into? Are, they are. So the company I was at before, because I didn't have an artist when I went in, I had to kind of, you know, maneuver around it. But the company that I'm in now, because I'm full time, I can't, you know, be off doing meetings and going wherever I want to go on a daily basis. But they are very understanding. I came in with the artist, so they know that it's something that I do, and they're very supportive, which is great. And it's very helpful, because if they weren't supportive, then it would be a very difficult situation and quite secretive. So I think, you know, if you're doing something that's part time or you're freelance, then it's much easier. But if you do have a full time job, as long as that job is understanding of what you're doing, then you're able to kind of carry on with your passions outside and do it positively.
Okay. And Adem, yours is a bit neater, isn't it? You're half the week.
No, it's not neater.
What's going on in your mind then? Because you're saying you have to be kind of present in the room, but then sometimes thoughts must stray over onto the wrong day.
Yeah. So I use the front for one lot of things and the back for the other. And sometimes I'll be in a meeting that's for one job that's really boring. So I will. And so I'll start thinking of other things and I just flick to the back and I just jot them down in the back. That's how I do that.
Does that answer the question? That's a good tip. That's a life hack. Yeah. And Avimaro, what about you? You mentioned about the seasonality and the kind of ebb and flow with term time, but do you, with touring or with writing and stuff, how do you schedule all of that in?
Like not very well this year, to be honest. I'm just going to be honest. I've found that I've taken on a lot of work, maybe too much. And it's really eaten into my creative, like my personal singing and songwriting journey, you know, because I've taken a lot of work that, to be honest, I just was really excited about, which is why I took it, because I was like, this sounds great, I'm going to do it. And quite a lot of stuff has kind of been offered to me kind of, you know, a bit later. So suddenly it's like, oh, can you do this next month? It's like, yeah, I can do it next month. Let's do it. But I do struggle. That's one thing that I find really hard with freelance life, is although you do have lots of different people who know that you're doing loads of different jobs, actually the reality of it is a lot. Even invoicing takes me a lot of time, because it's like I have so many invoices to send rather than just one. And like, you do know what I mean? So, I found lists are really helpful for me. So I have an old-fashioned diary, pen and paper vibes, and I write like loads of lists all the time. And I love scratching out, you know, my lines of what I've done. I even sometimes write in what I've done if I haven't written it in, and then cross it out. Just, you know what I mean? You know them ones. You know them ones, guys. So to-do lists are really helpful for me. But I do struggle with that, and it's something that I'm working on. And I would love to have a bit more balance. I think it's always a bit like sometimes you're not doing enough, another time you're doing too much. So yeah, it's a balance.
Do you have criteria that determine like whether you take a education job on? Do you, you like, oh, I
how much they paying?
You know, how much they paying? Don't want to go to that location or?
Yeah, location is really big for me. Like, because I literally in a day, like I have days where I'm in Hounslow, which you guys know where that is. That's like far west. And then in the morning I'll be in like, Camden in North London, and then in the afternoon I'll be in Shoreditch. Literally, that's a day for me, and I'm just like going everywhere. And so location is important, so it can work for kind of for my mental health, to be honest. So I'm not kind of rushing everywhere all the time. But I think a lot of it is actually like, will I enjoy it, and who's working on it, or who am I inspired by what they're asking us to do? Because we're really lucky that actually I'm really lucky that I can, it's to a certain extent, choose work, so I don't have to say yes to all the work that comes through, and I can be a bit more picky now, which I'm really grateful for, because it wasn't that case a few years ago. So yeah.
And Max, you're kind of in and out of studios and just doing that all the time. How does your kind of week look?
Yeah, so I mean, actually, what I've tried to do is kind of quite consciously keep it so there's a third of my time doing teaching, a third of my time working on my own music, and then a third of my time doing the kind of online e-learning stuff, but I suppose that's probably more over a year rather than over a week. There'll be weeks where I'm focusing more on one thing. So at the moment I'm finishing an album, so I'm probably sneakily putting in more time on my music than other stuff. But luckily the people that I work with are quite understanding that that's kind of how my stuff works. I think it's a lot of the stuff people have been saying about, you know, just not necessarily being like, I need loads of time. It's just, how do you use your time? So like today's a kind of perfect example that, wake up, try and be sort of dad and be around my kids and have a relatively kind of normal morning. Usually I'll be doing some sort of like work call on the way to the train station, try and get a load of emails out in the morning. Well, one interesting thing, you know, that people are more positive towards emails in the morning and more negative in the afternoon. So if you've got good news for people, send it in the morning. If you've got bad news, send it in the afternoon. That is an interesting thing I realized recently, which is actually definitely true. But so any kind of exciting good news type of things, I'm trying to get those out in the morning. But like today, I've got a new track, which I think might be a single for the album, but I could kind of hear a different remix for it. So before the kids are awake, before I'm doing anything, in the studio, export the stems into Dropbox so that the Dropbox syncs with my laptop. So when I'm on the train, open my laptop, that track's already on my laptop. Smashed a coffee, did a remix on the way to London. Before I'd even met my manager already had the remix and had listened to it. So I went to meet him in Manor House, talk about the track, write a press release for this youth label thing we did. So it's just kind of like, I only had like an hour with my manager, but we managed to get a day's worth of work done because I'd kind of structured my day. So, you know, what I'm trying to do less of is, you know, just pointless stuff where it's like, we'll spend 3 hours talking about stuff that's not relevant. And then, because it's really easy to do that, especially if you're all excited, everyone's excited about everything because it's all exciting. But actually, if you've only got 1 hour, it's like, okay, can they already have the music before I get there? Can they have had time to think about what we need to do so we're actually getting down to the important stuff? And then, but also I think actually it's gotten to the point where I've gotten quite good at that stuff to where there's too much stuff in my day. And what I'm trying to do now is just build a bit more of like actually just being kind of relaxed back into my life. Because if you do too much for too long, you can burn out. And I think I see people that I work with where that's the case, where they've gotten really good, they've gotten really organized, you know, they've taken on too much work because the work's there, but then actually they're not doing the work that well because they're not caring for themselves enough. So I think that's another thing, that when you are kind of on the up, when it's coming together and it's going well for you, just make sure, you know, you take a bit of time to actually look after yourself.
Okay, so I'm going to move on to talking about money, which may lead us on to talking about some other sort of self-employment freelance related topics. Adem, when we talked, actually we had a really heartfelt conversation about the challenge of sustaining yourself as a musician, and you mentioned that one of the big things that had actually helped you was having family that was in London, actually.
I don't come from particularly, well, not even particularly, I don't come from an affluent family. But my mum was, it does live in London. I'm from London. So being able to be here and not have to spend £1,000 a month on, rent, meant that I could work part time and could, develop the other stuff on the side. I definitely wouldn't have been able to do that otherwise.
But then as things have gone along, have you found that your income has kind of gradually increased, or what was the kind of breakthrough for making it full time?
Yeah, it was just every opportunity in that job that I was in asking for a pay rise. That's the truth. That is that every 6 months, I was like, great. So, you know, and I would take in the job, I would take on more stuff, and I really grew that. I started working for Sound Connections, working on Wired for Music, and I started one day a week. I was teaching music freelance, and I started doing a day a week there as an assistant. And I just was like, this is cute. Grew the role and eventually was just running the program, and that grew into 3 days a week, and I stopped teaching. And so as that was happening, I was developing the program and taking on more responsibility, which meant I could ask for more money. And it's not a massive organization, I wasn't like making it rain, but there was enough money to be able to make things work.
And didn't you I don't know if you gate crashed or you kind of hustled your way into a meeting so you could kind of get
sounds like
You were telling me you kind of managed to get into a meeting because you wanted to meet somebody specifically that was in that that meeting.
Oh, yeah.
It was kind of a really good connection. So that networking aspect of things has been important as well, hasn't it?
Yeah, I think I'm always someone who looks like 10 steps ahead. And I'm like, I was saying to Daniel and Yaka earlier, who are over there, that like even now I'm looking at job descriptions that I'm not qualified for to be like, what is in those? What do I need to do over the next 2 years so that in 2 years I can do that job and get paid my money to help me get to where I'm trying to get, which is a house. Oh.
And I'm going to go to Andrea as the other employed worker, salaried worker. I've known you for a long time, and I know that you have had to work really hard in a variety of jobs, some of which were not your ideal role that you wanted to get into to kind of make it work. Could you talk a bit about kind of getting through those years and having a variety of different kind of hustles and things to move on and develop your career?
Yeah, so just kind of going back to the beginning, when I left uni, I met you and I met Sam, and I started working with Young Guns, but I was also interning at the time. So I was interning in A&R, which is what I'm now doing, at a label, but I wasn't getting paid, as a lot of people are not getting paid. So I decided that I need to get a job which is going to pay me some money so then I can do some, you know, other cool stuff on the side. So I became a PA, which was really good experience, but as you were saying, it wasn't something that I really wanted to do at the time, and it wasn't within a company that I really wanted to be involved with. But I did that for a year and a half. And at the end of the year and a half, I thought to myself, well, this is kind of not where I want to be. So what am I going to do here? And I searched for jobs, but I wasn't getting jobs at the time because I didn't have the experience. So I decided to go and work at Screwfix for a little bit. And I worked at Screwfix and I interned somewhere else and I got the experience that I didn't have. And then at the end of that, I was offered a job in the company that I was interning for. And that was my first kind of artist management role officially. And I did that. And then I went on to become a day-to-day manager. The company I was in before that didn't have a position for me in that position. So a bit like you, I kind of looked around and was like, this is where I want to be. So I'm going to have to leave to go and do that. And I did. And got more experience and then found my own artists that I was really passionate about and started managing them as well. And kind of all in the background, I was doing certain things. So I was doing Young Gun stuff as well during that kind of whole period, as well as managing some other people and helping out some other artists. And then when I kind of left the day-to-day management stuff, I then went into A&R, which is where I'm working now, which is in a completely different kind of company that I've ever worked in. So we make music for film and TV and ads, like I was saying earlier. So it's a different kind of A&R to what I'm used to, but it's something that I'm really passionate about and really exciting for me. I'm doing the management on the side. So it's been a journey, and I've had to kind of take steps back to then take steps forward. And, you know, at the time you might be discouraged to have to do that because you might feel like this is not the direction I wanted to be in or be at this moment in time. But it really helped me to kind of take that step back and make sure that I got the experience. And then when you do move forward, you suddenly find yourself kind of escalating much faster than you thought you would.
Max, you've got your three different roles, and also I'm interested that you've had a couple of records, a couple of full albums out, I think. And
yeah.
Various other things, and I guess the income from that comes in totally different timing and totally different amounts from your other work, which is more like consistent.
I won't lie, it's kind of a fairly chaotic way of running things at times, but I mean I've been lucky that now I'm actually on a retainer with the education work I do, which is more like a kind of an employed role.
Could you explain what a retainer
is? A retainer is basically I'm paid the same amount every month to kind of be available to do work for that organization. And the reason for that is because what was happening is that occasionally I would do loads of work for them, and then sometimes I would do less, and that would be difficult for them to account. It would be difficult for them to work out how much they needed to budget each year for me. So they basically said, look, you're doing enough work for us. Can we do it like this? Which helps me, because I think the biggest issue actually for me with all of this stuff is cash flow. Is that you can be earning a reasonable amount of money, but if it's coming in, and like you say, with invoicing, a lot of people are really slow to pay you. That's one thing you need to be ready for, that you might earn a lot of money, but you might not see it for 3-4 months. And there's definitely been times when it's taken a while. So that kind of thing of managing your cash flow, I think, is the big challenge. But in terms of how I got to a position where I'm kind of doing pretty well with it, I think for me, it was kind of a similar thing to what Rook, I suppose everyone has said, is that I started out originally, my dad worked in the film industry as a prop buyer. So he was always a freelance, and our house was crazy like that. He'd have 6 months where he'd be earning loads of money and everything would be great. And then he'd have maybe 4 months where there was no work. And so growing up, I was kind of used to that freelance dynamic of like things being up and down. But what that meant is that then when I started volunteering, similar kind of thing, volunteering in youth clubs, doing music projects. And I had a record deal from quite an early age. I got signed when I was in uni, when I was about 20, with my best mate. So me and my best mate, unbelievably, had a rap crew that got a record deal, which is ridiculous. And I started, with my degree, I did a year in America. Being like a white guy from West Yorkshire, I ended up teaching rap workshops in California, which is just this, the whole thing is ridiculous. But I got back to Yorkshire and thought, well, if I can teach rap in the Bay Area, I can probably do it in youth clubs in West Yorkshire. And that sort of, I think just being like, okay, I'm going to do it, meant that then people started ringing me up and offering me workshops, freelance work. But what I kind of realized was actually I did enjoy being a youth worker as well, and just like the different kind of things that would come with it. But because in the background of my mind, I had this hustle that I'd worked with my dad in the film industry. I was used to working like 6 day weeks. I used to do like 19 hour days, like ridiculous stuff. And I hated it because basically there was no health and safety. It was just an insane environment. The money was really good, but I just got the sense that like a lot of people in industry just have terribly, terribly messed up lives. And I'd seen like a team with my dad, so I basically made the decision quite early on, I'm going to try and transition into doing any role I can do that involves music, whatever the pay is, whatever's going on, as long as it has like a set of processes in it, which I enjoy. And that's my one bit of advice. I would say, don't watch what the role is, what the name of the job is, watch what the processes are that you will be using. So with me, it was anything that had songwriting in it, anything that had music production in it, anything that had that kind of project management of a creative project, I was up for. And I would gradually just try and do more of that and less of the sort of more generic stuff. And really that's what got me to where I am, is that I decided I wanted to work on process, like what processes I had used. So then I just got better at those processes. And I think that was the one thing that, looking back, was the good move, was deciding what things I wanted to do day to day.
Abimaro, and just to go back to the question, is about how have you managed the kind of financial ups and downs of the career that you've chosen?
So I was like just working loads of jobs, like about 5 or 6 jobs for a couple of years, anywhere that I could really. Yeah, so I did that for a while. And the big change for me was I did Spitalfields music training bursary. They called it something different now. I think it's like the music leader program. But Spitalfields Music are an amazing music charity. And they teach you kind of how to lead workshops. And it was something that I found really helpful because I didn't want to be a teacher. I didn't really want to be in schools. But I also just felt like I wasn't, just because I could sing, didn't mean I could like teach people how to do that. Do you know what I mean? Like, I don't think you can just get up there and start doing it. I don't think it's for everyone. And so I wanted to know, is this for me? Am I good at this? And so that is what really helped me. I did a year and they give you a bursary, not a large bursary. So I still was working about 4 or 5 jobs as well as doing this bursary where you have to be available like about 2 to 3 times a week sometimes. So it was quite a lot. And I had a residency, and so like residencies I found really helpful for me throughout my kind of career, because then you can just gig at night and get paid. And I also ran the residency, so I got paid when I wasn't there.
Could you just explain what a residency
is? So it's when you are a regular performer at a location. So for me, I regularly, every Saturday evening, I performed at Gaucho. Like it's like an Argentinian like steak restaurant. And so I did that for years, and it was just great money. And I also like just managed to negotiate a really good rate. And I got steak every Saturday. Hey! And I also managed it so that I got all my friends in, so that when I wasn't there, I would get my friends in. I'd also get paid for when they were there, because I would run it. So like just stuff like that was really helpful for me, because then I could make the most out of working nights as well, and just gigging in general, kind of not necessarily, you know, very high profile or glamorous gigs, but they were gigs and they paid a decent amount. And when you collate that over the course of a month, you're getting a decent amount in. So I did kind of a lot of that. And then when I did the Spitalfields traineeship, I loved it. And I realized that there was this whole community of really excellent musicians who were doing it kind of like what you were saying, Max, about like they weren't doing it because like they failed at music. Do you know what I mean? It's like, oh great, you know, we have a teacher in who just really wanted to be like a rock star but didn't make it, so we got them today. And that, do you know what I mean? It wasn't like that. It was like these amazing musicians who do their thing and their craft is incredible, and they actually are very passionate about just sharing that as part of their craft. So I got trained by them, and then basically after that I went pretty much full time. And I just got loads of work, and I was very lucky. Like I don't think I've ever really had to send a CV out like since then, and that's been about 5 years. So I am lucky. I don't think that's everyone's story or everyone's journey, but I really took to it, and I work really hard, and I also go out and I say to people, this is what I do, like, and I kind of talk to organisations that I like and say, would I be a good fit, you know, like. So so for me financially, it's been the workshop, especially kind of and balancing that with good gigs or residencies have been really, really good. Yeah, really helpful.
So seems like a good opportunity to throw open to questions from you guys and for any of our panelists. I think
Hi, I'm Gabrielle. So this question's for Abby Morrow. How did you go about getting a residency?
So it was really random, actually. It was, I was doing a gig that I didn't really want to do, to be honest. I didn't really want to do this gig, but I didn't feel that ready for it. I did this gig like in, I don't know, somewhere in Angel. And, one of the people who was in the audience was like one of the kind of events marketing kind of managers, whatever, for Gaucho. So she came up to me after and was like, I love your stuff. I love your sound. Would you be up for doing this? And I was like, yeah, okay. And then I asked around a lot of my friends about how much I should charge, stuff like that, because I wasn't really sure. And I kind of went a little bit higher because I thought, why not? And yeah, that's how it happened. Since then, I also think something that can really help is just going into places. So I've just like, you can literally as a person go into somewhere that and just be like, would you like live music in your venue? And I think a lot of venues actually need that. I also set up the sound for them and everything. So I bought all the equipment, like that they gave me the money to buy all the equipment. I told them what to get, and then I would tell them what we needed if stuff went wrong or stuff like that. So I kind of made myself invaluable because I knew how to provide this service. And to be honest, a lot of it, I didn't actually know. I just asked my friends. So I think it's always worth, it sounds a bit old fashioned, but I think it's always worth going in and just like with a smile and saying to people like, do you know, would you like live music here? Because I could provide that. And then you never know. And they might have a few hundred, you know, a week that they can give you, go and spare, you know, because it brings in more people.
So say yes, you can do it, and then just work
yeah,
it out.
Yeah, I think
it
so. And just and make sure you've got friends so you can, not make sure you've got friends because you can't read, you know, you can't be like, make sure. But just ask people, even like you can just DM people now as well. If you know someone who's doing something, DM them like, how did you do that? Like, where's a good place to look for like a small PA? Is that helpful?
Yeah, that's cool. Thank you.
Any other questions?
Hi, my name is Sneha. So this is quite a general question, but when you're working freelance, I guess, especially when you're starting off, how do you sort of determine what rate to charge people? So if you're looking, so I do a lot of event coordinating myself, organizing panels, but even weddings and things like that, but trying to get into music. So how do you actually come up with that ballpark figure of, hey, this will be my rate or rough part of their budget?
One sort of thing that I still find myself talking about regularly is, I think it's a good idea to work from a day rate and then work out, well, how many of this thing can I realistically do in a day? So what proportion of a day are they asking me to do? And then do it that way. So, because I think you do get things where people say, oh, well, it's only an hour, so can we pay you this? But if actually the travel time, like you say, is going to take you over here and then back, realistically, that's taking you out for half of the day, then you need to charge them for half a day. And I think actually, like you were saying, Abimaro, like I found that when I started doing a lot of the work that I'm still doing now, I kind of thought, well, this is the best rate I've had up until this point. When they ask me what my rate is, I'll say it's that. So there's no point kind of giving a lower figure. So they can always say no, and then you can just say, okay, well, how about this? But most times I've said, well, this is the rate I go out for. And what I've started to do actually is establish a day rate based on what you think realistically you can make work, and yeah, maybe go on the higher side of it. But then also maybe just add a bit on if you're traveling further. So like now, if I'm working out of town, if I'm staying away, I'll add a bit on, because I know actually that does put extra strain on my family. It does make things more difficult to manage logistically. So for the way I think it's like, you have to incentivize yourself to really want to do the work as well. Because if you're having to travel really far to do the same thing you could do locally, then you kind of need to get paid more. Otherwise, you're going to be resenting the work.
I want to give you a couple of references on that. So there's a blog that's on the YGN website, ygn.co, which has got a formula for working out what to charge. If you want to have a look at that, I just put that up last week. Also, you might want to check out the Musicians Union rates, which gives you an industry standard rate of what the minimum the union think that you should be paid for recording, for gigging, for different kinds of work. And you might want to look at also Artists Union of England, or Artist Network, who are organisations that have freelance artists and curators and event managers and arts professionals working on there, and see they've got kind of standard rates for different types of work, for different levels of experience. And then also just ask around, ask people what their budget is. If people make you an offer, ask for 25% more. Just keep like working it as you go. And I found that like when I first started as a freelance, what I was getting paid is probably what I get paid for 1 hour's work now for a whole day. And I mean, I'm the same person, maybe I have a bit more skills now, but it's really just been the reputation building up and people being more willing to pay because they know what they're going to get. And it's, you know, how can you have that? How can you have like one day you're doing work and you're getting that per hour, and the next day you're getting it, you know, in 5 minutes? It's just quite a mystery to me. But as time goes on, you kind of get your own formula that works for you, I think.
I just want to echo your point about asking what their budget is. That is what I say every time. I never say, you never want to be the person to say the number first. And so I say, oh, this is really exciting. I'm happy to be really flexible. And we can figure this out on a day rate or over the course of the project. What's your budget? And then you just always put it back around to them, and then they'll get a number. And that works the other way too. If you're the organization, you could, yeah, well, you know, what's your fee? But I would say, try to never say a number first.
And then I've got one thing actually that I think would be worth chipping in, that I've been finding I kind of need to mention with quite a few of the people that I'm training is also be aware of the value of the intellectual property that you create in your work. So if you come up with a curriculum or a scheme or a plan, or if you're creating content, don't just assume that that belongs to the people you're working for, because it doesn't always. And quite often that's yours. A lot of what I do, a lot of the reason that I've managed to build a studio and still release records is because I realized quite early on, if I plan a series of workshops, I could then also turn that into an online curriculum, which can be used in schools. And I might also then use an idea from that on the record. So I've had one idea, but I've got paid three times. And I think that kind of scalable thinking is what has gotten me into the position where I, you know, I'm doing okay. But I think I see loads of people come up with this amazing stuff and then they'll never go back to it. And they'll do it all over again for the next project and then all over again. And then a lot of the time, the people who've paid them a day rate will then keep all that stuff and they'll keep making money from it. So I think just be aware of the stuff you're creating might be worth more than the day rate you've been paid to make it. And it might actually still belong to you. So it's worth kind of being aware of that side of things.
I think you can also think about what value for money you provide as well. So as Abimara was saying, she came and basically solved the venue's problem by sorting out all this kind of messy stuff to do with equipment, just telling them how to do it, and they didn't really have to think any more about it. So if you're offering something where, you know, somebody just calls you up and they're like, I want this, and you come in and just sort it, you've got all the documentation, you've got maybe a list of other event people that you can bring into the job that saves them having to kind of ring around, you can add more and more value to what you do, you can kind of basically build up better rates that way as well. Okay, any more questions? The front there.
Hi, I'm so sorry, I forgot your name.
Andrea.
Hi, I'm Andrea. So you mentioned that you do have the two jobs and then you decided that you did want to invest in artists because you felt like you believed in them. What kind of made you want to be like, you know, this is the person that I want to manage, I do want to, you know, grow with? What made you kind of decide that? And what advice would you have for artists who are looking to be managed and when you think it will be the right time to be approached? Because I think, I don't know if you said you approached them or they approached you, but what kind of made you take that leap in choosing that person?
So I first heard music from my artist via her lawyer, actually. This was about a year before I started working with her. So it was sent into my company. I heard it and I was like, this sounds really good, but I'm not too sure she's ready yet. It was later on that a friend of mine said to me, oh, well, I know this girl. She's looking for a manager and I think you two would really get along. I listened to the music again, realized it was the same person. I was like, actually, the songs sound really good. So for me, it was the music. I was like, these songs sound sick, and I want to get involved. At that point, I didn't really know much about her, so I didn't know kind of like what her drive was like, what her plan was, what she'd been doing previously. So when we sat down and started speaking to each other, we kind of got to know each other, and I found out what type of artist she wanted to be and what type of person she was. That was the kind of the decider for me. So on top of the music being amazing, for me, it was important that the artist had the drive and the passion and the kind of hunger to go to the next stage. And then to find out if what I feel the next stage for them or the future stages for them, if they feel the same. I think when you're looking for a manager, they have to be on the same page as you. And you really have to sit down and get to know them and make sure that you have the same plans. And that if the plans are different, they understand what your plan is and they know how to enhance that to make it better. So for me, get together, you know, at the moment, are you kind of gigging? Are you recording music?
So my story is kind of different. So I'm an English speaking and Turkish speaking artist. So I currently do cover songs and I put them on my channel. And I've gotten a lot of exposure from my stuff. So I have already people who are kind of on my case in Turkey and want to manage me. But because I am from the UK, I don't know whether to start off with someone here and then like have someone here or then, you know, have people in tech. Because I feel like right now I've started working on my stuff, but because I haven't gotten like a big amount of work that I can present to management in Turkey, I feel like they don't really know what kind of direction I'm taking. So a lot of my friends told me that until you actually have your music and your music ready, maybe it's not right for you to actually you know, go ahead with someone, and when you do feel like you have your content ready to present, then kind of go with someone. I don't know. Yeah. That's what I was wondering. What made you decide that someone was ready in terms of...
I think one aspect of it was that she knew what she was as an artist. So I think your friends are right in the sense that, you know, get together your music and find out what it is you want to make. When you do get a manager, they should be there to kind of steer you in the direction that you want to go in. So it's important that you know what that is. So depending on the sound, if you want to be, you know, if you're a singer who dances, or if you're someone who is doing really amazing cover tracks or whatever it might be, making sure that you know what you are first, so that somebody's steering you and not kind of giving you the ideas. For me, you know, I've worked with artists who just do cover music. So I work with an artist called Alfie Bo. So he doesn't write songs, he just sings covers, and he does amazingly well at it. But for me, managing on my own, I wanted someone who had a vision for themselves. So it's very different for different people. But it sounds like you have a vision, and it's just about kind of bringing that into one place and making sure that you're kind of building the creativity first, and then bringing somebody on board to then push that creativity to the next stage.
Thank you.
Okay, I think we have time for one last question.
Hello, thank you all for your good advice. My question is, how do you, when you're juggling so many balls, not drop any of them? Like, how do you manage to just keep everything afloat, even though it's like, you know what, this might have to get left because I can't do it? Like, how do you keep things going at all times, even though you've got various different hats on?
Can I, something I was thinking about when Apimaro was talking earlier about taking time to write, is that this, and I'm sorry if it sounds really simple, but like in my calendar, which I use iCal, is that you make that things are in boxes. And so if something comes up and say Daniel calls me and is like, oh, can you come and can we talk about this youth music thing? And I've got something in on Friday afternoon. If I can move that, I won't delete it. I'll just move it to another time, so that stuff that's movable gets moved and stuff that isn't doesn't. So it's really, really practical, but means that if there's time to do this thing, whether it's write or make music, it's in the diary. And if it means, all right, yeah, like Max was saying earlier, there's 1 week where you might spend more time doing that and 1 week doing more of this, but you've still given yourself the time that you need to do all of the things that you need to do.
Yeah, I also think that it's okay to drop balls, you know, like I think that's okay. I think we're human. And I think if sometimes we think, sometimes what we hold ourselves to, we then hold other people to. And I found that I hold myself to quite a high standard. And so sometimes then when I'm working with people, I'm like, yeah, you need to be up here, you know? And actually that's, you know, having grace with people and grace with myself is something that I've learned as a freelancer. That doesn't mean sloppy, doesn't mean do a really bad job. It means do the best that you can, but sometimes you're going to drop balls. And it's actually not the end of the world, because none of us are like, you know, king of the world. So it's like, it's okay. So I found that a bit of a relief, like, okay, like I might drop that ball. Let me be humble. Let me apologize for when I do, and let me keep it moving and do better next time.
Yeah, like, I think it's only a problem if you repeatedly drop the same ball. I think that's, you know, there's that kind of Silicon Valley thing, isn't there? A fail faster. Like, that's their whole man. And not that I particularly buy into their kind of anarcho-capitalist worldview, but like, I think the idea of failure being automatically bad is a really big problem for artists, because most of the good stuff comes from failing and then thinking, oh, but that part of the failure was kind of cool. And, you know, I think our ruling class definitely seems to fail upwards as well, but that's a whole separate argument I won't get into. But yeah, I think like you're saying, that don't be terrified. I think actually taking creative risks with your work generally is a thing you've just got to do. And I think actually from doing the youth music leader training, one of the things I find is, especially like young people who've maybe come from more difficult backgrounds are more risk averse, whereas the kids from the more privileged backgrounds are more comfortable taking risks. And I think that's one of the big things I'm trying to challenge with my work, is to say, actually, you have to be able to take those risks and push yourself and not be afraid to drop the occasional ball. Otherwise, the overconfident people who've had very privileged backgrounds will just wade in there, take the risks, not care if they fail, and get the work. And actually sometimes, yeah, like you say, like, you know, will you still be thinking about it in 10, 15 years? If yes, make sure you don't drop that one. But I think, yeah, be kind to yourself is sort of what I'm getting at here.
Just to kind of add to that as well, if you do, you know, miss something or something happens, I think it says more about you about how you fix it afterwards. So, you know, it happens to all of us. We all, you know, make mistakes or forget something, and then how you fix that and make sure that it doesn't become an absolute shitstorm is where you do your best work.
And on that note, actually, one really interesting thing, and this is a thing that my wife kind of told me and I realized afterwards she was right, was that sometimes those times when you've messed up but then you fix it, those can be the best opportunities to show who you really are. And a lot of the best relationships I've got have come from those situations where something's gone wrong and I've gone above and beyond to fix it. You know, if you go above and beyond to do something where they're surprised, some of those relationships are like really strong now, because people, yeah, like people do drop balls. Those things happen. But if you show them you're the kind of person where when that happens, you're going to go the extra mile for them, then they kind of know, okay, well, when it gets real, this person's going to be there for me and they can actually trust you. So I don't know.
Really, really nice note to end on. So thank you very much for coming. We're going to be here for a little bit longer doing a bit of networking. I want to remind you all to, if you haven't already, sign up to our mailing list, which is YGN on YGN.co. And you get advance notice about all our events, discounts to all our events, and some special information as well about other opportunities. So we just recently had an opportunity to go to the Great Escape, which some people in the room went to, I know. So just keep in touch with us that way, and also follow us on social media at YGN. Also want to say a huge thank you to Youth Music for curating this event with us and supporting the event. Thank you very much. And also to our other sponsors and supporters, so Handle Recruitment, the Musicians Union, me, Remy Harris Consulting, and BIM, thank you so much. And thank you to our team and our volunteers tonight as well, and to our fabulous panel. Thank you very much.
You've been listening to the YGN podcast, produced by Young Guns Network Limited. Young Guns Network was co-founded by Remy Harris and Sam Potts. For more about us, check out the website ygn.co and follow us on social media at YGN.